Welcome to The Big Table with me, Philip Limbury, and I'm delighted to be here at the Abergavenny Food Festival. And my guest today is Grace Dent, restaurant critic for The Guardian. Grace, welcome. What brings you to Abergavenny, if I need to ask?
Obviously the food festival. I decided that this year I wasn't going to be left out. It's one of those things that it rumbles on for a few months, at least a few months beforehand. You start to see on social media chefs, producers, journalists, all the great and good of food throughout Britain kind of rumbling about Abergavenny. It seems like it's, I'm crazily surprised by how big it is. Stalls everywhere, marketplaces, local produce, suppliers, farmers, talks, people setting up barbecues in the street, making like bespoke cheese toasties. And no, it's wonderful. It's wonderful. And it's so much work has gone into this, and they should be really proud.
Yeah, this is my first time here in Abergavenny at the food festival, and I have to say it's bustling. There's people, you know, everywhere in great crowds, as you say, stalls, wonderful smells from the fantastic food here. And underneath it all, there feels a sense that food is rocketing to the forefront of the discussion about sustainability. And you visit a lot of restaurants by way of what you do. To what degree is that sustainability issue coming out in the restaurants that you deal with?
Well, I think that I read about sustainability in chefs, you know, their aims and their intentions to be sustainable, to work without waste, to know the provenance of their food and to kind of be a force for good. I hear about that every day. I think that no good restaurant in 2018 worth its salt or who wants a place at the table with the big boys is going to say, I don't care about any of that. Some of it is very, very sincere. I think some of it is kind of like a knee-jerk reaction. If you are chefs, like to be able to go, oh yes, I'm into sustainability, and I don't know how, if you were to actually pinpoint them on what it is they want to do, I think that sometimes it crumbles a bit. But it's definitely a buzzword. It's a thing that everybody wants to be seen to be doing their part.
Sustainability to me very much means a whole range of things coming together: animal welfare, environmental protection, producing great quality food without chemicals and fertilizers and all of those things, or certainly without overdoing them. And yet the sad fact is that the majority of farm animals in Britain and across the world are reared in factory farms. They're caged, crammed and confined, kept indoors throughout their lives, or in dusty, muddy paddocks. And again, what's your sense of the rising tide or otherwise of interest in animal welfare amongst chefs in the restaurant trade?
I think that we are at a very, very interesting time with regards to not just chefs, people in general, and their attitudes to a guilt, I think, that they possibly didn't have before. An awakening in what is actually going on, in the horror of what is going on, a feeling that they don't want to be part of it anymore. I mean, I wrote a piece for Observer Food Monthly where I kind of, cards on the table. I don't really like eating meat. I don't like eating meat. I don't call myself a vegan because I leave the word vegan for people who are doing the heavy lifting of going into places and demanding shoes be made without leather and doing all the most wonderful things that they do. So I don't call myself a vegan, but what I do call myself is somebody who, if I can get away with not eating meat, I do. And dairy, because of exactly these things that you're talking about. I'm a massive animal lover, and it sickens me. It sickens me. It gives me sleepless nights, the things that I've seen. When I wrote that piece, I was taken aback by how many people who work in food, who work in restaurants, who cook, just said, good on you, I feel the same. It's quite, what's interesting is that all of us, and I mean, I can say this because like I can be candid, we all of us kind of food, these people, we have a voice in food. We all want to stay at the table. We all want to have an opinion. We all want to be asked and booked to come and talk about food. So we're all scared to say we don't like eating meat. Because by being honest, you may well turn the public against you. You may find that you're no longer asked to be on BBC One. You may find that you're not asked to be on Great British Menu because this tag of vegan, animal loving, bothered about welfare, it might mark you out as something kind of limited, too political, boring, whatever. So no, we're at a very interesting time because I think that more of us, and I'm not going to name names because it feels like people have got in touch with me who make their money off meat. They make their money off meat and they're saying, I just don't eat in the house. Because even when it's really, really beautifully farmed, sometimes they've lost the taste for it. Potentially through the fact that we're so exposed now to what is actually going on with factory farming. And I think with the dawn of internet, with the dawn of the internet, with the dawn of YouTube, with the dawn of social media, the big factory farms can no longer keep it from us what is going on. With the dawn of YouTube, we are seeing within inside slaughterhouses. We are seeing, how do you keep a pig? News stories come through. I mean, I watched one yesterday about that terrible hurricane that's coming into, and I can't remember where it is in America.
North Carolina.
And there was just this news story that flooded through Twitter saying that all these pig farms, millions of pigs just being abandoned. And things like that years ago would have been buried. Nobody would have seen it. But in these days, the generations much younger than me, they're seeing it and they're asking questions and they are, they're shying away. It puts you up a bacon sandwich in its frankest form. And they're coming and they're delighted when I say, when I go to a restaurant now, I think it's unacceptable if there's nothing for a vegan. It's unacceptable. It's unacceptable if there's nothing for a vegetarian, especially, but for a vegan, I said this in my restaurant criticism and in the Observer that if previously chefs would have this bravado and it'd be like, oh, vegans come in, oh, I'm going to put some ham hock in it, or vegan, if a vegan wants to come in, they can just go. That used to wash, I think, with the generation. And now, to me, that says to me that the chef's scared of extending his own skills. And it says to me, it says to me often that restaurant management will not front up to their chef. The chef's running the show, and the front of house or whoever, the people that are back in this restaurant are actually scared to sit around a table like the one we're sitting at now and go, are you actually saying that no one here can deal with tofu? Are you actually saying here that nobody actually has the same skills as, say, Mariana at Marito in Hackney? The things that she can do with an aubergine just make me cry. They're so wonderful. You know, and life is too short to fry your own aubergines, I think. But I think that people need to front up to their chefs and say, this is unacceptable going forward. As you can see, I've got a lot of passion about this. As a human being, I can't be part of this chain anymore. I mean, I need to say something. If I've only, it's funny how when you get into your 40s, you always kind of, you start to think, I've only actually got about 40 more years left. And if I can make a difference, I will. What has been wonderful as well is I really thought that when I started to say, I'm actually not impressed by the Glorious 12th, not impressed by it. I've lived amongst it all up in Cumbria. I'm not impressed. I'm not really that bothered by game. I thought when I started to make these kind of comments that I would get kind of swept off things like MasterChef. And they haven't. They've been wonderful and they've been supportive. They've let me set briefs for the chefs about vegetarianism and stuff. So it's been good. It's been good. It's positive times.
Well, it certainly sounds like the culture is changing, and yeah, there has been this kind of closed, almost machismo-style culture, and And you're absolutely right that the internet has really blown open the media possibilities. I remember I've been working in this field professionally now, campaigning against factory farming for 30 years. And 30 years ago, you know, you had to beg and borrow an item on national media to try and get some of these issues aired and exposed. And I remember by the mid-90s, as an organization, Compassion in World Farming was hiring its own secret cameras and its own investigators and things like this, things that before then had been the domain of James Bond. And we were able to show people what happens in the live transport trucks and what have you. And it coincided with an extraordinary moment when live exports started to go on through people's towns, through the likes of Dover and Shoreham and Coventry and so on. And there was this wonderful mix of people being able to see reality on their TV, see what's going on in their town and do something about it, stand up and say no, that this has got to stop. And here we are 20 years on further, and people can now post the realities of what's happening in factory farms to their friends, to their brethren, and this, I believe, has been what has been at the heart of this surge of acceptance of things which have previously been taboo. Yet the reality is that that most animals are still factory farmed, as we mentioned earlier, and that we all eat too much meat as a generality. The health advice is to eat less and better, so cut down on meat and dairy, replace it with more plants, and any meat and dairy you do have, make sure that it's better in being from pasture-fed, free-range or organic. What's your message to people? You know, what do you say for people that want to get more involved with the sustainability of food, and particularly when it comes to animals?
I think that there is possibly, and this all I've got to say this with the caveat that all of this gets me into a lot of trouble, because we are at a very interesting time in history, and it's interesting and it's also quite volatile, you know. So everything I say, there'll be people listening to this absolutely furious. I think that people need to be re-educated on just the basic ideas, like that they need lots and lots of meat for protein, and that they couldn't possibly eat or exist or survive if they're not eating lots and lots of steak, or what is more likely to be like processed ham. That is, they seem to think that they're getting some magical life-giving force from that, and that they can't get that from vegetables. You can't survive without milk. You know, that to go against decades and decades of us feeling that a glass of milk is doing us loads of good is impossible. But what I did was I read and read and read and read and read and try, you know, and almost broke it down, going, well, if I'm not going to drink lots of milk and I am instead going to drink soya milk, like, where is that actually from? I need to educate myself where that's from. Is oat milk any better? What am I getting from oat milk? What is oat milk actually? What do they put in it? Where am I getting my B12 from? Do I actually need B12? How much B12 do people need? I educated myself on that. So I think that possibly you have to go on your own personal journey. My message would be that possibly everything that you know is not true, and that's difficult, I think, for some people to try. And there's so many things in this country that we believe that a plate should look, we should have a plate at say 7 o'clock at night, and it should and it should have something brown which is flesh. And then and then two things like kind of pointing at it and paying tribute to it. It's very difficult just to break away with that. When, you know, people say to me all the time, well, I keep a completely vegan house. And they go, well, what do you eat? And it's really difficult to go, but I never stop eating. I never stop eating. But then when you say, but then if you say, well, I have some lovely carrots with like orange on them and like pepper and maybe a bit of honey, and I might have that with some couscous, and I might make a slaw, and I might, and right away you can see them going, but that's not a dinner. And it's really frustrating because you think that, you know, I've never felt better. I've never felt better than when I just started to edge a lot of this stuff out. Gosh, it's one of those things that I could talk about all day. But what I would, in a nutshell, you can feel better. And I know that my younger brother, I always call him my little brother. He's like 40 something, like enormous bodybuilding man who drives a van. You know, he's not my little brother, but we started to lock horns more on that, you know, like that I didn't want to cook meat in the house when we spend time together. And he has come round to my way of thinking. He has said to me recently, he's gone, do you know something, Grace? If I just eat like loads of vegetables instead of this, I actually feel better and fuller for longer. And it's like, and I think, gosh, if I can make an impact here. I think you also have to be very careful the way that you're doing it. I never went in with my family up north tub thumping and going like, I'm a vegan and everyone needs to throw their leather shoes. That's sort of making myself laugh. I just kind of started to say to them, when my nieces and nephews, they all go, are you vegan? And I say, no, I'm not a vegan. But I don't want to eat that chicken there because I don't know where it comes from and I don't really know what's in it. And I really would just rather have these lovely green beans that I've made with like macadamia nuts. And I would really rather have these lovely like new potatoes. And what, you know, I might make, even if I'm not totally against like veggie sausages and all that. I mean, that's another strand to it. Those things have come on so much in leaps and bounds. Mm-hmm. Everything. I remember the bad old days of 80s vegetarianism. I was a vegetarian in the 80s. I was a massive Smiths fan. And, listen to Meat is Murder by Morrissey, which is so brave and so political and like full of like, slaughterhouse noises. And I kind of came home from school and I was like, that's it, I'm a vegetarian now. And then realized that I was going to spend like the next, the next 2 years eating the same heated up microwave vegetarian lasagna, you know. And there was nothing, you know, textured vegetable protein came in like a packet and you got it maybe in Holland and Barrett and it was just kind of like dust and you added water to it and it was disgusting. So maybe another thing that I'm saying here now is if that's what you think of eating sustainably, eating well, if you think that you're just going to be living out of packets from Holland and Barrett and rubbish food, I'm here to tell you, you are wrong. You can come to wonderful, you come to food festivals like Abergavenny, you go to the greatest restaurants and they have wonderful things on the menu. Things have changed.
Grace, it's wonderful to hear your journey. And things have come on a great deal since the 80s. And one of the things I've been excited to be involved in is the launch of Beyond Meat, the all plant burgers that taste like meat. And I someone who doesn't eat meat, but hasn't done since I was 17. But I still crave that sensation. These new meat substitutes really are something else. In fact, I feel guilty eating them. I love your message that things are getting so much better and that restaurants that, yeah, if they're going to be serious restaurants and really be correct about things, that they've got to cater for all and make sure that they've got decent plant-based meals on the menu. It's been a real pleasure talking to you, a like mind, and Grace Dent, thank you.